My talk is really doesn't have much to do with calculus variations, but when I was looking over at the little write-up for the conference, there was something that said patterns and fluids, and so my topic has something to do with patterns and fluids. So I hope that's excuse enough to talk about this subject. And plus, the word vortex is in the title. Oh, T room 210. Okay. Well. Okay. Oh. Okay. So. Dynamic instability. Of elliptical. Vortex patches. And these are sometimes called also Kirchhoff. Ellipses. Okay. So, and also, well, this topic has something to do with equilibrium states. So it's not completely divorced from this conference. I should say this is joint work with Yan Guo and Chris Hallstrom. Both at Brown University. So I want to write down basically a sequence of three equations. And we're going to get more and more specific. Well, the first starting point is going to be the Euler equations in 2D. Actually, we're going to look at it on the entire plane, and then we're going to drop down to a more specific case. Well, as we all know, the Euler equations look something like this. Ut plus u gradient u is equal to the gradient of a pressure plus the constraint divergence u is equal to zero. Okay, so this is kind of a hard equation to deal with because of the pressure. And there's a simple trick to simplify the equations, and that's to look in the vorticity formulation. Okay, namely, if we let omega equal to the curl of u, then we get the single equation, the scalar equation, omega t plus u dot grad omega equals zero. Okay, so this is in the whole plane. So vorticity is advected along by the fluid. Okay. And the nice thing about it in two dimensions, well, we don't have any vortex direction. Stretching. In three dimensions, you actually have an extra term, which makes life much more difficult. So this is a nice equation, but it's not a closed system. Well, we want to recover the velocity from the distribution of the vorticity. So to recover u from omega, we let psi be a scalar. Okay, since u is divergence free, such that u is equal to gradient perp of psi, and that implies that Laplace of psi is equal to omega, doesn't really matter, plus or minus sign, and then you can invert it and then take the curl to get back u. So u is equal to inverse, the curl, the inverse Laplacian of omega. And so if we want to write it in terms of the fundamental solution, we have 1 over 2 pi, x perp log x minus y dy over r2, oops, times omega. Okay. So this is sort of the closed system that we're going to start with. And so, again, I want to go back to this equation right here. So we know that that vorticity is going to be advected along. So we can ask yourself, well, what happens if we start with basically a characteristic function as our initial data? So omega is basically equal to a constant. Well, that constant is going to be affected along by the fluid velocity. So if, say, omega of x 0 is equal to, let's say, omega of some characteristic function on E, okay, then we can follow the evolution, okay, as an evolution of the set. Call it E of T. Okay? And I'm going to use this notation also. Phi of T of E. Well, this will be our starting patch. Okay? And we want to know what is the shape as time evolves. Okay? Where phi of 0 is the initial patch. Okay, so this is what's called a vortex patch, and it's an example of a L1, L infinity weak solution to the Euler equations in two dimensions. And so that theory follows from, for instance, Yudovich in a Russian journal, which I don't remember the name of, in about 1963. Okay, so before I go any further, I want to really give an example. I want to give two examples. Okay. Example. Since we will be actively looking at one of those examples. Okay, the first one is going to be a circular patch. Okay. If we let E, chi of E, equal to chi of BR, okay, and you go through, you actually find that for initial vorticity distributed on this patch, that our velocity u is going to be equal to minus yx when r is less than r. And actually, I want omega naught equal to omega at of x t equal to 0. Okay. So it's times omega naught. And then we have omega naught r squared over little r squared minus yx for r bigger than r. So what does this look like? Well, it looks like a drain, right? Everything is spinning around with a radius r. Like a bathtub, or if you prefer, a hurricane or something like that. Okay? So this is a very simple example. And the next example is the Kirchhoff ellipse. And we'll call this KVP. Okay. Well, at the boundary, they're the same. And then it decreases. This is a terrible picture. So. And then it starts decreasing again. Okay. So so the Kirchhoff elliptical vortex patch. So here we're going to start with an initial distribution of a, sorry, x squared over a squared plus y squared over b squared less than 1. Okay, and I'm not going to actually write down what the solution is, but I'll show you what a picture of the solution. Okay. Well, we're going to have an ellipse this time. And along the long axis, it's going to be very fast. Along the short axis, it's going to be very slow. And you're going to have the same sort of decay as a quadratic as you go away. Okay. And the interesting thing is this patch is going to rotate uniformly in time. So t, and the rotation angular velocity is omega equal to omega naught AB over A plus B squared. Okay? So we have this nice patches rotating slowly in the plane. And so the question I want to talk about today is, well, so this is a nice equilibrium state. What happens if we start messing with it a little bit? Okay, so we change. It's not hyperbolic. Okay. Yeah, I think that's the right. Yeah. Okay, so here's our question. So, will a perturbed Kirchhoff vortex patch remain, okay, look like a KVP for a long time? So one thing we should think about is perhaps we could think about the red spot of Jupiter, which is sort of this giant hurricane, and it's looks exactly like a Kirchhoff vortex patch. But I should say you should not think about the red spot of Jupiter because it's not really the right system, but still think about it sort of. Okay, so this is a nice stable in some sense vortex patch. Okay, that's not quite in our system. Okay, so I want to next talk about the second equation, the so-called contour dynamics equation. Okay, and this was written down by Sue in Physics of Fluid, and I think 1979. Okay. And really, what we're going to do is make use of this nice relationship here for U, for recovering U. So what do we know? We know that U, so U of X is equal to 1 over 2 pi, gradient perp, log of X minus Y, dy. But now, since times omega, but now omega at the initial time is just the characteristic function, so that limits us to omega at our particular time. Okay, since the patch will remain a patch, that's dy. So what happens? Well, now since we are symmetric about x and y, we can flip it, and we get by using Stokes' equation, by Stokes' theorem. You get an integral around the boundary. Okay? So what we can do is we can parametrize the boundary point. So we let V of eta denote the point, the parametrized boundary. Okay? And so we get Zt is equal to 1 over 2 pi log z of eta, z of eta prime, d eta prime, z of eta prime, d eta prime. Okay? So this is the second equation, the contour dynamic equation. And so basically, this is an example of what's sometimes referred to as a self-induction equation. So or self-induction curve, self-induction equation, well, something like that. So you basically have a boundary that you're going to be integrating over, and that's going to change in time according to the shape. So it should be something pretty non-trivial happening in that equation. So I want to give you a few facts that are a little surprising So it was conjectured for a long time that vortex patches will in fact pinch off on the boundary and form singularities. But and in fact, when they did a lot of simulations, they found that vortex patches have filamentation. Okay. So if you look at the patch and evolve it in time, you start to develop little wisps coming off. So this probably should be the other way. Okay. So the thing starts breaking up and you get these really things that look very singular. But it was found out in 1993 that, in fact, smooth vortex patches are globally in time smooth. This is a shocking result by Chamin in 1993. And there is a different proof by Bertozzi and Constantine in the same year. Okay, so these things that look really bad, in fact, are not. So that was a real shock. Okay, but unfortunately, so if to use this equation to study the vortex patch problem, we can't really go far enough. So we want to get yet another equation. Exactly. It does develop fine structures, but yeah, so there's no uniform bound on the norms, right? I mean, that's going to blow up, but it still does not have any finite time pinch off. Okay, so the last equation I'm going to talk about from here on is what I'm going to call the Love equation. So this is 3. Okay, based on some arguments on Love, who I'll talk about in a second. So what we're going to do instead of evecting the vorticity, I want to evect a height function here, phi, where phi is positive inside and phi is negative outside. Okay, 1. 2, I want to look in elliptical coordinates. Okay, and 3, I want it to be sort of a graph in that elliptical coordinates. Okay. And then we're going to get a nightmare. Okay, so this is where things get hairy. Yeah. Well, I'll explain in a second. So this just means that phi t plus u dot gradient phi is equal to 0. And if we look at phi on the boundary, we get this enormous set of equations. Well, I'm just going to write them down once. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So if we're going to let z be a point on the boundary, then z of eta is going to be phi cosh psi 0 psi of eta plus I eta. Okay. This is what I mean by a graph. So I don't want to have something that looks like this. Okay. And here's the real equation right here. Psi t plus 1 over the Jacobian is equal to d by d eta of psi r So I'll explain a little bit what these terms are. So it's just not something crazy. Okay, so the Jacobian is c squared over 2 cos psi 0 minus cos of 2 eta. Psi r is omega squared over c over 2 cos plus cos. Okay, and this is the most important one, the last one. D by d eta of psi is now I d eta z of eta log z of eta z of eta prime d eta prime. Okay, this is a complex inner product. Okay, so right. So what are the equations? So really, morally speaking, the real balance is happening right here. This is where time derivative is, and this should really be thought of as n dot vt equals to n. N dot v is equal to n dot vt. So we're just looking at basically the normal direction. So the normal motion on the boundary is being affected by the normal velocity, right? We're not really caring about what happens if particles move along this singularity, because it's not going to change the shape, right, of the patch. So that's the love equation. And so why deal with something so ugly? That's a good question. So this should describe really what happens for a perturbation of this elliptical vortex patch up until you get something, you know, that looks like this, up until it violates being a function, okay? Until filamentation happens. So why concern ourselves? Well, let me say two remarks. So bad news. So no global existence. Okay, so this is much worse than what Shemin, Bertozzi, and Constantine were able to do. So that's really bad. But on the good point is that we have linearization. Let me make it an easy linearization. Linearization. By the way, when am I finished? Oh, okay. We expect there to be blow up because filamentation generically happens in this graph equation. Now, if we were to change the z to be, you know, to have let them both vary, then we would be okay. Exactly. It's our perspective, right? So the reason why we're doing it is because we want to piggyback on good results. I mean, that's really where, right. Someone has done a lot of work for us already. Right. We're interested in a qualitative picture. We're interested in a qualitative understanding and not a regularity result at all or long time existence. So, good news. Easy linearization. So, this is love. So, this dates back a while. This is proceedings of the Royal Society of London in 1893. So this paper is actually surprisingly readable for being so old. And it's actually a really nice paper. Yeah. And so if we let Q, for the sake of being careful, equal this base Jacobian, that's with psi of eta being 0, and this being our linear variable, and then writing this in terms of a Fourier series, fine, we get this really beautiful set of equations, A and dot is equal to plus lambda 1 n, Bn is equal to 0, and B bn dot minus lambda one, lambda 2, sorry, n an is equal to 0. Okay. And so if you do this out, you find that minus lambda 1, lambda 2, n equals lambda n squared, so this is our eigenvalue, equals w squared, or omega squared over 4, times, okay, let over here, gamma equal a over b. This is the major axis over the minor axis, so these are just questions of the basilet. Is gamma, make sure that's right, gamma minus 1, gamma plus 1 to the m minus 2m gamma, gamma plus 1 squared minus 1. Okay? And so we get this incredibly nice result. And what is the punchline? So the punchline is if gamma is less than 3, linearly stable, and if gamma is bigger than 3, linearly unstable. Okay? So we go back. I did a little research this morning on the web, and I, well, so again, this is not altogether true. I traced out the red spot of Jupiter, and you can see it's about 2.5. So it's, again, it's not quite our system because there's a shear flow coming in, but it's not, right, it's not exactly, that it's very different, but still, it's nice that it somewhat corresponds to what we're talking about. So this is the linear result. But I want to say something more. I want to know, so does the Kirchhoff patch perturbations behave according to the linear theory? Okay. And so this is the first result. The first result is from 1985. Theorem 1, communication in mathematical physics. Okay, and Tang and transactions AMS. Actually, 86. 87. Okay. So let gamma be less than 3. Okay. So we want, so this is a statement about nonlinear stability. So this is that the true patch evolution is going to evolve in some qualitative sense, like the Kirchhoff vortex patch. So we need to know, we need to have an understanding of qualitative. And so we know that generically the patch is going to filament. It's going to create filaments. So we don't want something in a really strong topology. So something like L infinity of the boundary is going to be generically unstable. And that's really not what you're seeing in these pictures. You're seeing that things are staying close to the ellipse if you have a small ratio, but little bit of filamentation on the ends. What is a better way? Well, really what I do is show that that the area is pretty much, when you subtract off the original ellipse from your ellipse, your evolved ellipse, it'll be very, really small. So the L1 difference of the area should be very small. So let E0 be the base. Then there exists delta C0 positive such that for all delta, if E is a perturbed patch, perturbed Kirchhoff vortex patch, with characteristic function phi 0 of the base ellipse is less than delta, okay, then you want to be small. Then for all t phi of t star e naught l1 less than c0 delta. Okay, so a couple comments. So this is some t star. So comments. There are a few other conditions here. Like for instance, you have to have a mean. You have to have like the first moment of this perturbation also be zero, or something. A lot of a few extra special things. And here, this is actually a stronger statement. This is the orbital. That this satisfies orbital stability, meaning that there could be, the evolution could somehow conspire to rotate a little bit faster. What you want to say is that it's close to some ellipse that looks like your initial ellipse, because this is rotating in time all the way around. Okay, so I can finally state my result. Our result. Okay. So, there. Let gamma be bigger than 3, then there exists a delta naught, epsilon naught positive, such that for all deltas in this regime, if epsilon, or E is a what I call a generic perturbation, okay, which I'll talk about in a second, with phi naught of E, phi naught of E naught, less than delta, okay, then there exists a time, so a time for the onset of instability, okay, which is going to be roughly equal to, on the order of log of 1 over delta. Okay, so instability time will increase as this perturbation gets closer to 0, such that phi naught of E naught, phi naught, sorry, phi of T delta of E minus phi of T of E naught in L1 is bigger than epsilon naught. Okay, so this basically says, right, so you start as close as you want to an ellipse, as you want to your base ellipse, then if you wait long enough, it's going to move away from your base ellipse. This is for all t. So it's going to be basically qualitatively apart, far away from any rotated ellipse. Okay, the shape is going to be changed. It's no longer going to look like an ellipse. Okay. So, okay, I don't have too much time. So I want to make a few comments. So, usually when you prove these sort of nonlinear instability results, the difficulty is, getting really sharp control on the linearization. And then it's usually pretty easy to bootstrap at that point to show nonlinear instability. In this case, actually, the linearization is not bad at all using this formulation. I mean, it turns out that using these equations, the bootstrap is what's a real nightmare. Okay, so I don't know if I'm going to have much time to talk about the method, but basically what you do is we're interested in implementing a method of Grenier. So we want to. Method of Grenier. CPAM in 2000. Okay, so in the past there have been some successes in, for instance, studying the nonlinear instability of Vlasov-Poisson problems and Ginzburg-Landau problem. And Grenier introduced a new method for showing sort of generic perturbations. And so in general, the old method was just to find the dominant eigenmode and just follow that, okay? Just use that as your single perturbation. Grenier's method was to allow for a much larger class of perturbation. And so this is what we're talking about over here is generic perturbations. It's pretty much any, we're going to take our base ellipse, perturb it by any any periodic C infinity function with one perhaps condition on the dominant eigenvalues, the coefficients of the dominant eigenmodes, just to ensure that we have at least excited this dominant eigenmode. Okay, so that's sort of one small condition. So we're C infinity on the boundary plus some small condition. Right. Right. Yeah. So we're going to use our perturbation according to this phi. So we don't want phi to be a constant. We want, or psi. Is this psi? Psi. We want it to be C infinity, periodic. And we want to be mean zero. Right. So that would kill this condition. So we're going to write out into a Fourier series. We want some condition about perhaps the amth mode not equal to lambda 1 over lambda n m, am, or bm. I think this is the condition. So something like this, just this one condition. Okay. So right. So if we did have do by constant, we'd be wrong. Right. Okay. So I have about 5 minutes or less. A little less. Right. Okay. Well, I'll just give a real basic. I'll say a few words. Really, the method, in extreme generality, is we want to use strong knowledge of the linearization, okay? So the first thing we do is, well, we need to actually make sure that this equation makes sense. So we show local existence of the love equation, okay? This is actually where most of the difficulties are going to come in fact. And the second thing we do is we actually implement a method of Grenier where you find an nth order approximation to the love equation. Okay. And so this is basically, the linearization would be the first order approximation. We want to pump it back into the equations to get better and better approximations that will give us sharper and sharper control. So this is where Grenier method comes into play. And we're going to call this perhaps psi A. Okay. And then we want to estimate. So here we have psi. Estimate psi D, right, in an appropriate topology. Okay. We can show that this is really small, but somehow we can really just bootstrap along what the dominant eigenmode is doing. Okay, so what we're doing is we're basically latching ourselves on in some way to the linear growing mode and making sure that that's not That's not too growing. That's not blowing up too fast. And then finally, we can show nonlinear instability. Okay. So I guess the last comment I'll make, since I have only 1 minute, and I'm coming again maybe through a third of what I wanted to talk about. The big difficulty is really studying this equation, or this term right here. So we need to find HS bounds on this equation, on this singular integral operator. So the last thing I want to say is that primary difficulty we had was finding estimates of the form like this. D by d eta s of log of z of eta minus z of eta prime times d eta prime in L2, bounded by something like a constant times omega, z to the HS to some power. Well, I can call this some function of z to the HS. Okay. And you can see that you can't just move the derivatives right over that. In some sense, if you take one derivative of the log, it looks something like, 1 over z minus z prime, okay, which is something like a Hilbert transform. Okay, so we need to make use of that. But we don't have a convolution. It's a non-convolution operator, so we have to be a lot more careful. And so we have a sort of a trick to integrate by parts. Most of the messes is in this part. Maybe I'll stop there.